Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Nerdsplaining, your favorite comic book podcast, a comic book podcast for every level of nerd. Don't forget to hit the like, share, and subscribe buttons. Leave comments for us on iTunes so we can climb those charts a little bit. I don't remember the helpline number, so Dave's going to give it to you.
It is 805-669-7230. And then we also have a special guest today.
Who's our special guest, Dave?
That would be Jay. Jay. I don't know his last name, so I'm going to say Chandra Sekhar.
Jay Chandra Sekhar.
You are the guy from Broken Lizard.
There you go.
Super Troopers.
So
there you go.
Today, we are without some of our compadres. Jess and Greg aren't able to join us because, well, Florida's having some rather inclement weather right now and not allowing them to get to where they need to be. And
in other news, the Pope is Catholic.
Hurricane's a bitch.
And Jerry, Wookiee Bay, he's on some sort of adventure. So Jay's going to join us today. Today we're going to be talking about the Marvel movie universe, the MCU, and the DC movie universes. What's been good? What's been bad? We'll be able to throw out some, we'll be able to nerd-splain some things. What were some of the stories that they were pulling from the comics to make some of the movies? What were some of the things that worked? What were the good parts of Suicide Squad? What were the bad parts of phases 1 through 3 of Avengers? We could do several episodes on that just themselves. But we're just going to touch base on, we're going to do some of that, and we're going to, throw in some actual comic book knowledge from specific issues, specific stories, just to kind of teach that. And as always, call that helpline if you thoroughly disagree with us or you want to give us your perspective, or hit us up on Facebook or Twitter and whatnot. We've been getting a lot of feedback from our listeners. We're always loving that. We're all glad that you're enjoying listening to our episodes. We're trying to get better and better and better as we move along. So, that was some adieu. Where do we want to start? Jay,
I would say so if we're going to talk about the universes, we kind of have to establish where those universes started. For Marvel, it's fairly obvious. With Phase 1, it started with Iron Man and then continued with Incredible Hulk, etc. The DC universe, is that considered as having started with Man of Steel or Green Lantern?
Starts with Man of Steel. I think they really wanted it to start with Green Lantern, but that did not go well. And I think Green Lantern actually would have been an interesting takeoff point for their universe. It would have been different. That just didn't work. It could have worked, but they bit off way more than they could chew with that movie. I mean, trying to throwing Parallax in there as the main villain for that film.
Sort of.
That was rough. I mean, don't get me wrong. For anybody who's listening, doesn't know who Parallax is. Dave's chuckling already. So in 92, when Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern, went crazy after Emerald City was destroyed, he completely snapped and he killed most of the Green Lantern Corps, and it ended up getting retconned, and he was calling himself Parallax. And the story at the time, which was good, was, okay, Hal had gone so far off the reservation that he gave himself a new name. Years later, it gets retconned that, no, when he went crazy, it was because he had finally been infected by the entity of fear that powered, then eventually being the power for the Yellow Lantern Corps.
Bullshit retcon. Bullshit retcon.
Dave doesn't agree with
it. Better the first time around.
Which had been held in the the big Green Lantern
battery on
Oa. Right.
So at one point, yes, the Green Lanterns they were ineffectual against anything yellow because the yellow entity of Parallax was trapped in the battery.
Just kind of a lame. It's kind of a lame weakness for him. It was right up there with the Alan Scott Green Lantern. I'm weak against wood.
Yeah.
Well, really? That's it?
Right.
Erections were a pain in the ass for him.
It was not a fun day.
Oh, that means two things.
Double entendre.
That was like triple entendre.
Right.
My bad.
So Man of Steel is what they wanted to kick off the DC Extended Universe with. And for all intents and purposes, it was a great starting point.
Yeah.
Like, there, I think it became cool for some reason about 2-3 years after the movie came out to start bashing it and really going after it. I mean, people had
right off the bat, people bashed it.
I didn't see as much of that.
It was weird because, like, and I'm in between. I'm sandwiched between two Superman fans right now, and I'm a Superman fan myself. But it was weird because you had the Christopher Reeve ones, which I remember showing to a group of like 12 to 18 year olds and have them fell asleep. We're like, this is boring. It's like, I'll punch you in your young fucking mouths.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people were like, you know, and then Superman Returns came out, which is the greatest fan fiction, the greatest fan film ever made, but it's not a Superman movie. And like,
the one people don't talk about.
Yeah, and people were bored by it. Superman didn't get anything. He didn't hit anybody. He didn't punch anyone. He was too Boy Scouty, too saccharine, blah, blah, blah. Dark Knight comes out, or the Dark Knight trilogy comes out. People are like, oh man, they should do Superman like this. So they do Man of Steel, which is basically that. Mm-hmm. And people, I mean, and it doesn't surprise me. People are always going to find a reason to bitch, but that just bothered me. I heard a lot of people going, oh man, I don't know where they're getting any of this from. They're getting it from the comics. They're getting it from the new Krypton stuff. They're getting it from Birthright. Mm-hmm. They're pulling directly from the comics.
Mm-hmm.
And then the big controversy was, oh my God, spoiler alert, but it's been out for what, 10 years?
No, it's been 6 years.
6 years. 6 years, yeah. And everyone's like, oh my God, he actually kills someone with his bare hands. Yeah, no shit. It's really easy to just have a character where it's, oh, they don't kill. Why? Because they don't kill. No, they gave, you know, Clark and Cal that moment of coming to terms with the horrific emotional and psychological effects of killing somebody.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know, it just, the hatred that the character gets and that the movies get, no matter what they do, it's a can't-win scenario.
Yeah. I mean, me and Jay have talked about this before. Me and Jay have spent, you know, many years working in, well, pseudo-law enforcement. And it gets, you know, and we've talked about that, okay, the point of taking a life, it's not an easy decision to make. And sure, Clark in the comics has always strived to not kill somebody, but it was something, okay, if it had to get done, it had to get done. Like, Jay, how did you view, I mean, so you've done plenty of Superman reading, that, like, especially that climax.
I thought it was a really interesting choice. It was, for me, like Dave said a few minutes ago, it put in position, it puts him in a position of, what is more important to me? What decision do I have to make? Here's, you know, the people of the planet that I have come to love, that I identify with, versus somebody that will never stop, that can never stop, and they can't do anything to stop him.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I prevent that?
Mm-hmm.
And in this split decision, he's got to make that decision. What choice does he have?
Right.
Prison's going to hold him.
Yeah, it was either watch billions of people die and help this one clearly madman, or save billions of people. And at that point in his life, it was, I care about people and I don't want to do this. And so he had to make a choice, and some people say, oh, well, he could have just flown him straight up. And then what?
Not necessarily even.
Right.
As much as he could fly right Zod up, Zod can anchor himself.
Right.
Superman doesn't just turn off the flight and fall at 9.8 meters per second squared. Mm-hmm. No, he accelerates downward. It's the same thing Zod could do. And that's the thing, is they didn't make it like, oh, we're just in the middle of the fight, and he Steven Seagal'd, you know, Zod. No, Zod was actively trying to murder a family.
Right. Well,
actively trying to murder a family. Point,
no matter what you do, I will keep coming after
right
these people. I will destroy everything you think you love. And how do you stop something that he knows humans can't stop this?
Right. And I think my biggest my biggest point of contention that I hear a lot of people say is, you know, they get upset with all the destruction that happened in Metropolis, where it was, oh, well, why didn't he fly him out to the desert and have this fight and everything? Okay, he had been, quote-unquote, Superman for about 12 hours at that point, And he was finally, you know, able to, you know, he was finally tapping into what he could do. He had never had to deal with something like this. Wasn't a playground bully. This wasn't, shoving telephone poles through a semi-truck to teach a bully a lesson. No, this was a world-ending individual who was trying to kill him. There's no point in any of the Superman reading that I've done and the books I've got behind me where I'm like, yep, when he was this young and this inexperienced with his abilities, that he could have stopped that fight dead and gotten Zod out of it. Because if he just took off, Zod wasn't going to follow him. Zod was going to lay waste to Metropolis regardless. So he was trying to mitigate the damage. But anyway, so that was plenty on Man of Steel. So we've said that the Marvel. So where do we want to go from here?
So Marvel. What's funny is people are like, oh man, you know, the Marvel universe is focused so much around Iron Man because Iron Man was the first one in their cinematic universe. What's funny is I don't think a lot of people necessarily realize the risk that I think it was Paramount was the production studio, and Marvel were taking with an Iron Man movie. That was not a well-selling comic at the time.
Definitely.
He wasn't tearing it up. He was, you know, a lot of people thought the character was sort of clunky and sort of a joke. He'd had a few decent storylines, but a lot of crap. Well, and then
at that particular time, he'd kind of fallen to a second or third tier character in the Marvel comics as far as sales, as far as storylines.
Yeah, as soon as you're relegated to something like the Avengers West Coast, you're not a top-tier Marvel character. If you're a main, you know, level Avenger, you're fine. You're sitting pretty. But if you're West Coast or the Great Lakes Avengers, even worse, oh boy, then you've got an issue. And then from there, they did the Edward Norton Incredible Hulk, which personally, I still fucking like the Incredible Hulk.
Oh, absolutely.
I still think it's one of the better Marvel ones, you know? Mm-hmm. I thought,
whenever I see Jay at the gym, I think of that Incredible Hulk.
I think of him as the Abomination.
That's fair.
It's probably more
accurate. Yeah, I totally see him as the Abomination. And that was actually a great part of it, is they had this, you know, iconic Hulk villain, and then, you know, having Tim Roth as Emil Blonsky, he did a really good job. The casting was done really well. It sort of, kind of picked up from the Ang Lee Hulk, which, you know, that's another one people hate. There are parts of the Ang Lee Hulk I really like. And then they threw in that teaser at the end with Tony Stark meeting with General Ross,
which didn't go anywhere.
It didn't, because they changed their plans. Their original plan was, when they got everything together to make the first Avengers movie, their big bad was going to be, you know, Hulk, or Hulk was going to be a big, you know, problem part of it. Instead, they changed directions and, you know, went with Loki, which ultimately I think was probably better.
It was a better move. I would like to see some consistency of whether or not Incredible Hulk is considered part of that universe or not. Because as far as, like, their box sets and stuff, like, their Phase 1 box set, Incredible Hulk was included in that.
Mm-hmm.
But storyline-wise, as soon as Age of Ultron comes out and General Ross is giving Cap shit over, hey, where are Hulk and Thor right now? Because if I lost two nuclear warheads, I'd be in trouble. Well, sir, you did misplace one, and you seem to have gotten a promotion, not scolded for it.
But that's the same General Ross, so they carried that actor over, even though they switched the actor that played Banner. So it's
a whole other discussion.
Right. Like, it's part of that. It's part of that universe. Yeah. There are some hard lines drawn in the sand with, like, everyone's favorite of the Bruce Banners. Like, Edward Norton, you know, great actor, apparently impossible to work with. But I'd still buy him a taco if he's ever in St. Louis. I thought Eric Bana did a fantastic job. Eric Bana came across as troubled and brilliant. Like, he seemed like a scientist. Mark Ruffalo seems like a guy fumble-fucking around in a chemistry lab in a high school. You know?
I think we got more out of Mark Ruffalo's Banner in the first Avengers movie than we have anything else. I mean, that's the only thing we've really kind of seen of Banner, really, is that the beginning of the movie when Widow goes to find him, and he's hiding out in India or wherever he's hiding out.
Right. Yeah. Granted, he is in, spoiler alert, it's on Netflix at this point, but he's in Thor Ragnarok a fair bit just as Bruce Banner. But even then, you're not seeing scientist Bruce Banner at all. Like, they don't, I mean, they showed us a little bit of that in Age of Ultron, but I think they just give, like, I think it's, here, we'll just give the fans just enough to show that he's a scientist, like, that part of the character, but it seems like, okay, the only reason we're having Bruce Banner on screen is, well, because the Hulk can't fit in the shot.
Right.
Like, that seems to be the only real reason.
We'll save a few dollars in CGI to...
Right. Like, instead of having to make Hulk-sized chairs in the Avengers Tower.
It's like the, it's like the inverse of the problem a lot of people had with, like, The Dark Knight. You know, people, I remember a lot of people complaining about The Dark Knight, that there's not a lot of Batman in it.
That's a complaint.
There's a shitload of Bruce Wayne.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of this Marvel Cinematic Universe, not a lot of Bruce Banner. No. There is a shitload of the Hulk, though. I mean, especially by the time you get to Ragnarok, but there's a reason, you know, for that.
To tap into that point about the Dark Knight series, it's a complaint that I have. There is cinematically, yeah, they're fantastic films, and there's no arguing that whatsoever. The acting in them is top notch, but to me, they're not bad. That's not Batman on the screen. I mean, at no point do you see world's greatest detective. He does the whole ballistics test, and he, you know, okay, that's cool.
That's the one.
That's the one.
I thought that was good.
That's good, but is it?
Found the fingerprint.
But 5 minutes across three movies, and especially when it comes to Rises, that first time he goes to fight Bane, I get it, he's arrogant, and he thinks, I've seen this guy on film, I can still take him, it's fine. And no, he walks straight at Bane and just gets pistol whipped.
Well, he was on a catwalk.
I get that.
There wasn't a lot of room for lateral movement.
No, I get that. But I mean,
but he boxes him the whole time.
Yeah, he just throws these slow, lazy elbows that...
They make that go after he had just snuck up through the caverns, hiding in shadows, ducking down,
right,
people into shadows. Well, let me go toe-to-toe with Bane.
Well, so... And that doesn't necessarily bother me because, you know, that was Selena dropping him into a trap and he didn't know Bane was going to be waiting on the other side of that catwalk. What bothers me, and it bothers a lot of people, is the knee brace.
Yeah.
They just showed him putting on a knee brace and knocking a brick out of the corner of a pillar, and he doesn't throw a kick in that entire first fight. He boxes Bane, and that's why he gets his ass handed to him.
Well, and... Apparently, he's been out of the game for 8 years at this point, and just
jumps
right back in.
It was almost as bad as when Jordan came back to play for the Wizards.
Ooh, oh,
sorry, ouch. Sorry, I didn't mean it. It didn't feel good, but I'm not wrong. Just saying, the Wizards never got a ring out of it. I think both movie universes, clearly both movie universes have had ups and downs. Marvel and Disney are riding high, and they're definitely winning that battle.
They're running a hurricane of cash.
They really are. On the flip side of it, maybe it's a conversation we can save for a different day, but DC is slaughtering them in the actual comics, though. In the content of what's going on the page, DC's killing it.
Yeah.
But there are movies that get kicked real hard. Like, and I'm just, the point I'm going to make is Suicide Squad. Suicide Squad, you and I were just talking about just the other day, was, yes, did Suicide Squad miss the mark? Yep. But there were a lot of really good character moments in there. You're taking Leto's Joker.
There's just logical gaps in that fucking movie. They start out by saying, what happens if Superman goes rogue? We'll get a guy who shoots bullets that won't do anything. A guy that throws boomerangs that won't do anything. A guy that shoots fire at him that probably won't do anything. A strong crocodile guy that won't do anything. A guy that ties some good nooses who won't do anything. And this chick with a katana, which won't do anything against him. And this magic chick that will.
That one.
You've got a whole squad, and you've got one that's potentially a threat. Oh, yeah. And we've got a chick with a hammer, a baseball bat, and some guns.
And some short shorts.
Won't do any shorts. Yeah. Yeah, we have someone who looks like they just forced their dad to take them on a shopping spree to Hot Topic.
So, Jay, what was some stuff that you actually liked in Suicide Squad? Or yeah, let's go with Suicide Squad.
Let's go down the line.
Yeah, what was something that you actually liked in Suicide Squad?
I actually liked the development of those characters that are not some of your A-listers you'll get from DC Comics, but you get a lot of character development and see kind of some of those characters that you don't normally see. So just to see them on screen, to see them live action, that was fun to see.
Definitely. Yeah, I was just saying to Dave the other day that I actually liked Will Smith's Deadshot.
Mm-hmm.
And some people have said, oh, well, it was just Will Smith being Will Smith. That's fine, but tell me about, I've read plenty of stuff with Deadshot in it. He doesn't have a lot of characteristics. You can make the character whatever you necessarily want to make it to be.
But at the same time, the Arrowverse, the TV universe that they have based, around Arrow and Flash and all that, they managed to make a very compelling Floyd Lawton, a very compelling Deadshot, that a lot of people were really sad to see go because they gave him a lot of motivation and gravitas, stuff like that. We got as much as they could throw into a 90-minute movie with Will Smith.
Right, I mean, that's
but it was still, like, I don't...
in an ensemble cast.
I like Will Smith, but Will Smith is always Will Smith. And there's not necessarily anything wrong with that. You can do very well, as he has. Harrison Ford is always Harrison Ford. Jack Nicholson, with the exception of the Joker for the most part, is always Jack Nicholson. So some actors do very well with that. But when it comes to these kind of characters, I want to see the characters. That's why I liked Heath Ledger's Jokers, because I couldn't see Heath Ledger behind that. I like you said, I liked Jared Leto's Joker. I think it was a good actor and a great role for him, but it was the product of bad writing.
Yeah.
Because there are some great moments in there. We're talking about this. The one of them they cut out, which was that highway scene with the, I think it was like a motorcycle wreck and all this stuff where Harley's just screaming at Joker in the middle of a highway. And I don't even think she's been turned fully yet.
Right.
Was just a really compelling scene. The what is it? And then the chemical plant scene is fantastic because insofar as Joker and Harley have this very abusive relationship, and for those of you who put stupid Facebook statuses up that say, "I want a relationship like them." Cool. You could also get a relationship like Ike and Tina Turner or Rihanna and Chris Brown. Just find someone that's going to beat the shit out of you. That's what that is.
Mm-hmm.
But you have that moment where he throws her in, and he turns his back and is walking away. He has every intention of like, screw her. And you watch Leto go through this process of a massive amount of regret for the Joker, and then dive in after. And to me, that was just a really well done moment. The music for it could have been a little bit better. The soundtrack on that one was, that movie was weird.
They were trying to do it
for me. Like, Joker should have been the villain.
Yeah,
I agree. Leto, I think we had such good potential, but there was just not enough connective tissue to the Joker in the movie. We didn't.
Right.
We don't know enough about this Joker.
Mm-hmm.
He pops up a few spots, and we really just don't know enough about him.
Yeah, if we'd have seen more, it'd been great. It would have been nice that if maybe the following year there was a Batman movie or something coming out where we already knew that he was going to be in that one, and we could look forward to seeing more of it. Not okay, are we maybe going to get another solo Batman movie in the next half decade? Is that going to happen? Maybe we're going to see that Joker, maybe we won't. But there was no plan. They just threw it in there. And I think overall, I think we can agree on this, is the lack of Warner Brothers having a plan.
Which, okay, so when it comes to the hate that people give to DC movies, a lot of times it seems like people want to lay it all on the writing, and sometimes the writing is the issue. The bigger issue tends to be that Warner Brothers can't keep their damn fingers out of it. They are constantly getting over-involved and throwing this crap into the movies that doesn't work and cutting them for time or editing them into incomprehensible messes. A big example of that was Dawn of Justice. Dawn of Justice, if you watch the director's cut, which to me is the only one that exists, is really good, but it's still out of sequence.
Yeah.
You still have issues with where it is. There's a key moment of Lex with three representations of mother boxes talking to a hologram of Steppenwolf, who you would end up seeing in Justice League. That was like a post-credit scene or a deleted scene. That needed to be in the movie, and that needed to happen before the library event where Bruce and Clark meet for the first time, because you see Lex have this weird moment where he kind of snaps and his speech is incomprehensible, and that isn't a Lex Luthor trait. That's someone who just peered to the other side of the universe and saw the new gods and went a little crazy trait. And I think that would have explained a lot of the eccentricities of how they did Lex Luthor. Some of it was character choices. Some of it was, you know, Zack Snyder's choices. And polish up that movie a lot more than it ended up being.
Yeah. I don't want to say Dawn of Justice was necessarily rushed, because I don't think that was the case. I think it was bad form to take... You know, you had Man of Steel. Man of Steel made a killing at the box office, was reviewed really well, word of mouth was fantastic. People were excited to see what was coming next. Mm-hmm. And then he takes second billing in a sequel, which was essentially a sequel. And then Superman and or Clark has 11 lines in the entire film. And don't get me wrong, Ben Affleck's Batman, absolutely fantastic.
God, so
I mean, a lot of people who see the movies and follow the movies and follow the comics, they're probably playing the video games too. And people loved the portrayal of Batman and Bruce Wayne in the Arkham video games, especially the combat, especially the fighting. Well, Ben Affleck's Batman gives that to us in a real life setting, or you know, in a live action setting, and it was well done. But there was no balance there. Everything was super dark and super gritty, and there should have been a dichotomy. When Batman's on screen, it's dark and scary and broody. Oh, look, Clark and Superman on screen, it's nice and sunny. People are happy. And, like, don't get me wrong, I wish that movie would have been basically Lethal Weapon, but with those two. It should have been a buddy cop film.
That would have been awesome.
Right?
Right.
And the thing is, you couldn't even add it in, because Ben Affleck, being as old as he is, we could have gotten, I'm getting a too old for this shit line, because he's been doing it for 20 years. That movie should have written itself. I mean, and I can get into the, I'm not going to do it now, but I can get into the point where I struggle to understand why movie studios need to come up with go through the movie making process of making storyboards the way they do for all other movies for these comics, for these comic book movies, when the storyboards have been done for you.
Yeah, Sin City is my favorite example of that, because Sin City, the first one, is the most faithful adaptation of a comic to film ever, because that's literally what they did. They took the comics and used them as the storyboards. And the other complaint that...
And 300.
Yeah. The other complaint that the DC films gets a lot is that they're pretty humorless. And they are. Those are pretty humorless films.
Yeah.
And that's a stark contrast to Phase 2 and most of Phase 3 of Marvel, which my gripe with those, aside from being very formulaic, is they were overly quippy. And I thought, to me, that that crescendoed at Age of Ultron, when even the fucking robot quipped, that drove me nuts. And people were like, oh, well, it was based on, you know, Tony's thought patterns, blah, blah, blah. No, it wasn't. It was the Mind Stone interacting with Jarvis that created the damn thing. And then you have just a quipping robot. And, you know, that was sort of a waste of James Spader's voice talent. He's such a good voice actor for that, and he can be so menacing and so sinister. But instead, they went, "Oh, well, we got to throw in some jokes too." Like it was just unnecessary, and that was the same thing that, you know, when Ant-Man, for a while there, with every Marvel movie that came out, and every time there was a trailer, my big reaction was, "But will they quip?
But will they quip?" And then I think the. On top of the quipping for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the other problem they have is how they just mow through villains.
Oh, God, yeah.
Jay, how have you felt about that, like, as far as one movie and that's all a villain gets?
That, to me, that's a big irritating feature of the Marvel movies, because that's part of, I think, part of what helps people keep coming back is the threat of somebody that you can't quite put down. For me, one of the biggest frustrations was the Mandarin. I couldn't believe the treatment. And I love Ben Kingsley as an actor. I mean, Sir Ben Kingsley.
Yeah, exactly. He was good. Like, the way that they interpreted that Mandarin for those, you know, short videos he was sending onto the television waves, those were awesome.
Yeah,
those were
like,
so good.
I believe that is a real terrorist. He will blow everybody up.
Right. Now, does the All Hail the King or whatever, does that... That little short that it does that excuse it? Is that enough to clean that mess up for you? Or?
We've not revisited it in 8 years.
Not until we get an actual Mandarin.
Right. So there has to be a payoff to that. I mean, that was, you know, with Captain America when they, you know, Red Skull gets zapped away at the end of that. And then we get, you know, two more Captain America movies, and Red Skull's never even mentioned, never brought up again, and he's Cap's biggest foil.
We did have a 70-year gap while he was asleep.
No, I get that. I get that. But
yeah, I mean, he probably assumes Red Skull is dead because, one, blasted into a big blue ray of light because that was the phase one thing to do.
Right.
And two, it's been 70 years.
Right, but he was a super soldier as well. I mean, but there's never even a, like, hey, did anybody happen to know what happened to the red-faced guy? Just, I'm curious, because he almost killed me, and nobody else has been able to polish that off. So, I'm just, did we find his corpse anywhere? Nothing. And sure, I mean, can we mention what happens in Infinity War at this point? Or is it too soon?
It's been over.
We'll say spoiler alert. We'll say spoiler warning right here for Infinity War. You can skip ahead a few in the audio here for a few minutes. But Red Skull finally pops up in that, and sure, it was a neat role for him. But yeah, okay, is he stuck there, or are we going to get whoever plays Cap in the future? Are they going to get to deal with Red Skull again? Because there are good stories for Red Skull to be a part of that are very cinematic, but
he was part of Captain America Reborn. The Red Skull was inhabiting Steve Rogers' reanimated corpse. It was freaky. The All Hail the King thing, what that makes me think of, All Hail the King is the cinematic equivalent of The Check Is in the Mail. It really is. No, the real Mandarin's out there. When do we get to see him? He's out there. Whenever we choose. It's just such a The Check Is in the Mail sort of thing. And like those, you shouldn't need those shorts to make up for mistakes that you've made in your cinematic universe. You know, that should have been clear. It should have been clear to them that what they were about to do with the Mandarin was a mistake. You could have left the Mandarin out entirely from Iron Man 3 and just use Aldrich Killian and the Extremist, which is fine by me. That was a good story. Or you leave out Aldrich and you leave out the Extremist, since the Extremist armor itself really didn't pop up till Infinity War.
Right.
Which was also sort of the Stark Resilient armor. And then you just do the Mandarin. That thing that you sort of tease in the first movie when you had the terrorist group, the Ten Rings.
Right.
Like, it was something that they'd sort of been building for a while at that point, and they just did so little with it. Like, and I think that's what bothers me the most, is there's this overwhelming belief that DC films are only, there are only bad DC films. They can do no right. And meanwhile, people think Marvel can do no wrong. I completely disagree. I think, and I've said this before, there are DC films that are better than some of the Marvel films, and there are Marvel films that are better than a lot of the DC films. Now, to be fair, you have now 19 Marvel films and 5 DC.
Man of Steel,
Dawn of Justice,
Wonder Woman.
Justice League, 5.
5, yeah.
So you have 19 to 5. It's going to be hard for the 5 to take over a lot of those 19, but they are there. Like, Thor. Wonder Woman is better than Thor and
easily.
Thor the Dark World. You know, Wonder Woman's better than a lot of the Marvel. It's better than Ant-Man. I think it's better than Doctor Strange. I think Doctor Strange is weird, because when I saw Doctor Strange, I wasn't that impressed, because it just seemed like Iron Man with an even more irredeemable dick as the main character who doesn't really learn a lesson.
Yes.
Like, he's still a dick by the end.
He's just watched a magical dick.
Yeah. That was my nickname in high school.
That was
but
the nickname
then
I wish
he
I
kept
had
pulling ra- thing is he kept pulling rabbits out of it.
Yep. But then I watched Doctor Strange again a couple weeks ago, and I sort of took it away from the rest of the Marvel Universe. I watched it as if Iron Man had never happened, and in and of itself, it's solid. But the problem is, because it exists in that same universe, those parallels that you have to draw between Doctor Strange and Iron Man, you can't necessarily discount. It's a lot like, to me, Guardians of the Galaxy and Avengers Age of Ultron by extension. Pretty much the same movies.
Guardians is
funnier.
They're formulaic in how they approach everything.
Yeah, that same, you know, very, very formulaic.
Well, they've got a, I don't want to be insulting and say it's a cookie cutter pattern, but they found a system that works and they've stuck with it because, oh, hey, it's making us billions. Okay, we're not going to change anything. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't, there's good and bad that comes with that. I don't think that DC should do the same thing. Like, they shouldn't have started the same way that Marvel necessarily did. Okay, do one movie for each of these characters, then do a team-up movie. I think there's a way you could have leapfrogged with the introduction of characters and whatnot. Like, they could have done a Man of Steel 2 that introduced Batman and introduced Wonder Woman, but let Clark do his thing.
Right.
And then move forward with that. Like the point I made just the other day was Coca-Cola had a recipe. People loved it. Lots of cocaine. But then Pepsi came around and was like, hey, we can do that too, but we're going to change it up just a little bit with a little bit more cocaine. And they're both successful. So you can do something similar but different. What were you saying, Jay?
I was just going to say, you know, it's to me, you look at these two production companies, you look at Marvel and you look at Warner Brothers putting out the DC movies, you can see where Marvel has had a plan at least multiple years out. It doesn't feel like DC or Warner Brothers has had a long-term plan as this is where we're going. These are the milestones we want to hit.
DC has bad continuity issues. Like, they have an outline, but they don't know what they're doing with it. And so they're like, oh, yeah, so you have Dawn of Justice, which introduces this concept that Wonder Woman's, you know, not helped mankind in a number of years. Then you have Wonder Woman, and now they're doing a Wonder Woman 2 that takes place in the 80s. Okay, so, like, 30 years she wasn't helping mankind? Like, a lot of that, to me, comes from the end of Wonder Woman, which I have a problem with, because they had an opportunity with the end of Wonder Woman to say, war happens because people fundamentally suck. Humans are fundamentally, you know, kind of violent and kind of shitty. And then they flip that on its ear and, like, nah, just kidding, it's all Ares. Have an Ares fight. And that was a Warner Brothers decision to do that, which sucks. But yeah, Marvel though screws themselves over by letting everyone know their plan.
Right.
The ending of Infinity War would have been really shocking if we didn't know another one was coming out next year. Then people wouldn't have just been like, oh my god, they would have been fucking pissed.
There have been tears.
It's an Empire Strikes Back ending, but it's like, no, it's okay. There's another one coming out next year.
Plus all these other characters.
Right. All these people that you saw die right there in this big power
moment. They still have five more pictures on their contract.
Right. Exactly.
And we all know that.
Now, Grant, there are people that go see the movies that don't know that. It's a really small part of the audience.
My dad.
Yeah. Like, he goes to the movies you take him to.
Yep.
And so that, for them, sure, that was a jaw-dropping mind F. It really was. But, I mean...
Oh, we've got the E on the podcast. You can say fuck.
Mind fuck. There we go. But, like, I watched Infinity War, and I wasn't looking forward to Infinity War at all. And, I have respect for some of the Marvel stories and characters, but they're not my bag. In the Marvel movies, I haven't been all that invested into. So Infinity War, I didn't really care all that much going into it, and then when I could see the writing on the wall of how it was going to end, because I also knew how the story Infinity Gauntlet ended, okay, I knew what they were going to do, but I was like, oh, but Black Panther just made you $1 billion, and you've already slated his movie. Amazing Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man Homecoming 2 comes out next year, before Avengers 4. So I'm gonna love to see how they do the marketing for that, because they're gonna have to put those trailers out. Or sorry, no, Homecoming 2 comes out like a month after Infinity War or Avengers 4.
Well, and also they have that other Spider-Man flick coming out. The the other Spider-Man flick, which is the animated, yeah, the animated one with Miles Morales from the Ultimates universe.
Right, but I don't think that ties in at all.
I don't know. I really don't know how that ties into. I mean, obviously it doesn't. It's not tying into that universe. I don't think we're going to see an animated, you know, Spider-Man flying out of a dimensional portal in an Avengers movie.
That'd be a true Mary Poppins moment right there.
That'd be interesting, yeah. Oh no, we have these alternate universes. One of them's animated. All of a sudden, all the X-Men from the 90s series come running out with bad voice acting and everything.
Only to have this theme song, yes.
Yes. Right. And actually, what I just hummed there was actually the final countdown. But
I might
stand up and clap. Yeah.
So
now
we've
that's a ballsy move.
So we're getting into the home stretch of like last 15 or so that we have here. So, and ultimately, listeners, it's up to you. Don't be suckered in by the bandwagon hatred and the troll train. Just watch it. If you enjoy it, enjoy it. You know why you enjoy it, sure, but don't feel shamed or stupid or anything like that because you like a movie that a lot of people didn't like. It's a subjective thing. But if we're getting in the last 15. Why don't we just do, like, our top three DC, our top three Marvel?
You literally just read my mind. This happens all the time between the two of us, but he literally just pulled that out of my skull.
Mm-hmm. What you guys didn't get to see is he actually looked in his ear.
Yeah, he did.
It's gross. It's cat hair and shame.
Yeah, mainly shame. But, like, you can't use Q-tips anymore. Since, like, 97, they're like, no, your eardrum.
No, you can't use Q-tips because you never figured out that when you start feeling resistance to stop pushing.
I just figured that's supposed to be a challenge.
Why don't you put a full box in there?
Oh, shit. Eric, you're supposed to use condoms on your Q-tips or not?
Huh?
Condoms on the Q-tips, right?
Inside out.
Oh, shit, I gotta go to the doctor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like that idea. So, who wants to go first? Jay?
We'll start, yeah, Jay, what are your top three, what are your, of the DC universe that exists right now,
and
those five, what are your top three?
And why for each one?
I think I'd have
full
to start
thesis.
With... full thesis, right. I think I'd have to start with Man of Steel.
Okay.
Just because I'm a Superman, unabashed Superman fanboy. And I like the origin of it. I like how they kind of took it. Wonder Woman would have to be next.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was a great story. It was a good origin for her. It was nice. It had its problems, like you said. I had problems with Ares at the end, but I thought it was told well. It was done well. Great cinematography. And then, let's see, where would I go from there? I might get some shit for this, but I'd have to say Justice League. To me, it was a fun romp to see all these characters together in real life on a big screen. It was just fun. It was fun to see all of that.
And we finally got that hope that we've been...
Yeah,
there's some levity finally.
Yeah,
but we had to earn it.
Right, and the Superman...
I could write a whole
dissertation how, okay, I'm glad it took us three movies to finally get that Superman because then we finally earned it as an audience.
So, House, your top three, your DC... Now, these don't have to necessarily be in order.
No, if I'm going that way... I'm gonna say it's gonna be Man of Steel and Wonder Woman kind of tie up that the top spot for me because I get chills.
All of them.
Yes.
All of them.
Yeah. There's gonna be two ties.
No. It's gonna be those two tying it because when I watch both those, I genuinely get chills.
Right.
Especially the No Man's Land sequence in Wonder Woman. It's just jaw dropping. It's awesome. Man of Steel, that the first time he's taking flight. It's great. Then I'll say Justice League for very similar reasons that Jay was mentioning. And then three, I'm just gonna, because I just rewatched it last night and I had a lot of fun with it. And it doesn't necessarily fit into those five movies. I don't care, but I do like Green Lantern.
I knew he was gonna say that. And I knew he was gonna pick four. and make it an out of six. Yeah, see, for me, I think it's, at this point, it's kind of undisputed that really Man of Steel and Wonder Woman are going to be in pretty much anybody's top three. But I'm going to deviate, actually, and say Dawn of Justice for the third one for me, because I think Dawn of Justice was, despite editing flaws and some sequential issues, I think it was a better film than Justice League. There were also things that I wasn't a huge, like... I really like The Flash, and I appreciate The Flash being the comic relief of Justice League, but Ezra Miller, hashtag not my Flash, I think. He doesn't really do it for me as Flash. But Ben Affleck and what he pulled off in Dawn of Justice, I thought was really well done. I mean, the first time you see him, he's hanging out in a corner. He's freaking terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the performances were, relatively solid, if not great. And yeah, it had issues. Doomsday looked like an animated nutsack. You know, but
it was the wrong type of Doomsday.
Yeah. It shouldn't have been Doomsday. It should have been Parasite.
It should have been Bizarro.
I make the argument they shouldn't have had Doomsday in it. It was too much of a story in there.
Yeah. Right. It was too much of a, if you were going to do that, doing Bizarro would have made the most sense because you could have still had Lex involved because there had been stories where Lex created Bizarro as Subject B-0 and that would have worked just fine. But it was that parallax thing again from Green Lantern where they tried to bite off way more than they can chew in an instant and they shouldn't have done it. Best as we are wrapping up before we get out here, let's do a reading list.
I was gonna say do the top three of the Marvels.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
We still got time.
Yeah, go ahead.
Jay, what about the 19 or so Marvel ones? So we're leaving out, Captain America and Captain America Death Too Soon from the 70s. We're leaving out the Captain Americas from the 90s. We're leaving out the Harvey Korman Fantastic Four and the Dolph Lundgren Punisher. Sorry.
Dolph Lundgren's out.
And also, by extension, we're leaving out Punisher and Punisher Warzone, which I rewatched Warzone last night, and I still like
Warzone's
it.
Warzone's a good one.
I know!
Stinson does a great, yeah.
That Smith & Wesson 500 Magnum that he has, though, is the most cartoonish fucking gun on the planet.
But he can hold it.
Yeah, right? He can hold it. He shouldn't be able to fire it, really, from a standing position. And there should be nothing but bloody splinters left of someone's head when it hits. And that the rounds on that thing are ridiculous.
Yeah, the point Dave made last time we was watching it was like the John Bernthal and the Thomas Jane, like that Punisher, when they're mad and they're in a room, it's kind of scary. Like it's like, oh no, Frank's here, we should all be quiet and use our manners. When Punisher Warzone, when Ray Stevenson walks into a room, everyone's shitting their pants out of their eyeballs.
Like, Stevenson doesn't, you don't even have to see that Stevenson's angry. It's just by virtue of the fact that he's in the room, buttholes pucker.
Yeah.
You know? All right, so anyway, your three favorite Marvels.
Okay, let's see. I wanted to give props to the first Iron Man, kicked it off. Yeah. Thought that was a good story. It was a nice way to kick off the universe. I don't think RDJ did. Just kind of surprised everybody with that.
See, I'm surprised. I don't know. He seemed typecast. He had a lot of, to be fair, and I have a shitload of respect for Robert Downey Jr. Mm-hmm. But when they cast him, and they were like, yeah, I thought the first thing I thought of was,
He's done a lot of life prep work.
Exactly. It seemed like there was a lot of, he had a lot of experience to be able to draw from through that. And he just kind of looks like Tony Stark anyway.
Right.
Yeah. So I'd have to say that's up there. I like the first, I kind of have four of them. Like the first Captain America.
Hey, the very first man.
To me, that was just, it was a solid story. I love the character. I love where he comes from. And just to see kind of how he came to be, I like that. First Avengers team up. That was great to see. Mm-hmm. And then the new treatment of Spider-Man. I actually like that. Spider-Man Homecoming. It was fun. It was different. It was some of the Spider-Man we hadn't seen and the 17 others we hadn't
seen. between two additional actors. House is the resident, not necessarily a huge Marvel fan. I already know one of yours, and that's Ragnarok.
Yeah, Ragnarok definitely is it. I watched Ragnarok after you bought it on Blu-ray, and I was watching it. And I watched it late at night because I felt shame and I didn't want anybody to know that I'd seen it. But when I got done with that movie, because I laughed all the way through it, I actually had fun all the way through it. It actually felt unique, where it felt like a different experience from the other Marvel movies. So yeah, that one was a lot of fun. The whole Surtur thing at the very beginning, that kicked it off with some good laughs.
Son of Odin! Surtur! Son of a bitch!
I did think Hela was a garbage villain. I didn't think she did. She really did a lot.
But for some reason, Cate Blanchett in that costume did it for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like
antlers.
And at some point, no, like when the hair was down, I was just like, why? What? Man, she looks good.
No, I mean, antlers and booty pants, that does it for me too.
20 years ago, yeah. Galadriel. Today?
Right.
Right.
So,
man, she's aging like a fine wine.
Yeah. So yeah, Ragnarok is definitely there. I'm actually going to say Iron Man 2. It's for one. I actually liked Whiplash for the 5 seconds he's actually in, really the entirety of the film. But the when he's putting on Centurion armor, but the briefcase armor.
That's the Silver Centurion armor.
No, because the Silver Centurion armor was actually in 3. It actually has broader pointed shoulders. Actually, it got taken to school by about this whole thing years ago. It looks like it, but it's actually not. It's a separate armor in of itself. Yeah. It was the first time we actually saw him having a portable version of the suit, not having to fly to him and whatnot. I thought that was really, really cool. And then I guess I would probably lean towards the first Guardians movie, except for Baby Groot. Baby Groot and Teenage Groot and whatnot that we get in Infinity War and stuff like that, I don't really care because I'm not 9 years old.
You didn't get much of Baby Groot in the first
Guardians. But even the dancing sequence at the end, I'm like, I don't... I'm going to catch a lot of shit for this because my sister-in-law is a huge Groot fan, especially Baby Groot and whatnot, so I'm going to get hit the next time I see her for this. But it just that part doesn't do it for me. But yeah, the first Guardians is going to probably round out that top three.
Yeah, it's that nice thing about the Marvel one is that there's a lot to choose from, so you can get some, definite big differences. For me, my top three is Captain America: The Winter Soldier. Jesus criminy, that was so good. It was 3 days of the Condor, which also had Robert Redford. It was something that was unique for the time, for the phases that Marvel had been through, because it was like an espionage thriller. Mm-hmm. The combat, the fight choreography was spot on. Even though the fight is short, the fight with Batroc the Leaper, George St. Pierre on the ship at the beginning, is a really cool fight. And
the fact Chris Evans didn't shit his pants for going up against
him.
Against a real MMA fighter.
He did, but eventually you're out.
you can't poop.
The Winter Soldier, I thought that they adapted the Winter Soldier from the comics very, very well. Yeah, it wasn't the same, he didn't bring Bucky back to knowing who he is by holding up the cosmic cube and saying, remember, but they instilled a lot of heart into it, which I liked, and they made the Winter Soldier a T-800, a Cyberdyne Systems Model 101 Terminator. When he shows up on the screen the first time and any subsequent time when he's in combat, first of all, you have that screaming musical note, and it's a force of nature that's coming for you. It has no remorse. It has no feelings about what it's doing. It has the mission, and that's it. And I thought that was really cool. And, oh my God, that freeway fight. And you got that cool little knife flip that Bucky does. Love that. So that's very high on the list. Also, I loved Infinity War. Big part of that is I'm a big fan of Josh Brolin. I'm a big fan of Thanos. I thought the marriage of those two was fantastic. I thought he did a great job in the role. I thought it was great to see, lend some sympathy to a villain. Which they've done twice now, because they also did it with Killmonger and Black Panther, and that's what made Killmonger a great villain that they ultimately killed off. Assholes. but no, Infinity War, the humor for Infinity War was peppered in and not layered all over it. And some of them caught me by surprise. A lot of people love the Drax Invisible thing. I think that's overblown. I think that joke went on too long. But one of the ones that does crack me up is when it's Strange, Stark, and Star-Lord. What master do you serve? What master? What do you want me to say? Jesus? You're from Earth. No, I'm from Missouri. Which is on Earth, dipshit. I love that sequence. That exchange just cracks me up. And then for the third one, I'd want to say Captain America First Avenger, because I love it. And it reminds me of The Rocketeer a lot. There's a lot of heart in that one. The scene that always sticks out for me is the schnapps scene before the before the big day, and Dr. Erskine telling him not a perfect soldier but a good man, and just tapping him right on the heart. I love that scene. But in the interest of maybe only doing one per franchise, I think my third favorite is Guardians 2, which is an unpopular opinion, but it took a lot of what worked in Guardians 1, added some new stuff, gave us a villain that had a much better motive to me. It was much more interesting than Ronan the Accuser. Gave us a battle with the final villain, not a dance competition. Mm. Not enough can be said about how well the soundtrack worked with that film. Most especially Cat Stevens for Yondu's funeral.
Oh, yeah.
Shit. That still makes you kind of go, I'm fine. No, they're cutting onions and you're crying. just a really great thing. But yeah.
So what are the three of us reading right now? Like I know you're reading a bunch. I see your comic book stuff going home basically every week. But what is some of the good stuff you're really reading right now?
Superman has been really good by Dan Jurgens. Yeah. They've done a really good job with that. They do it's like oh, here's a 4-issue story, and here's a really heartfelt, sort of Americana Norman Rockwell issue, and then they do another story, something like that. So that's been really good. Aquaman has been really good, really? Because it's been very Game of Thrones, without the incest, or really any sex, but a lot of political intrigue. Daredevil is interesting insofar as Matt Murdock is the mayor of New York. But, as far as the stuff that I look forward to reading when it pops up in my pull and hold, it's usually Superman, Aquaman, and Invincible Iron Man. Although Brian Michael Bendis is done with that. But Iron Man I was really enjoying because it was a continuation of Infamous Iron Man, where Dr. Doom is Iron Man. He's trying to do the right thing. And it cracks me up. Dr. Doom is an A-list son of a bitch. And all these D-list villains are like, oh no, we're going to take him out for trying to turn good. Really? You're the Hood. And the Wrecking Crew. Against Dr. Doom in an Iron Man suit. You out of your mind? Idiot.
What about you? Have you been reading?
Actually, I'm going back a little bit, but it's a reread for me. I'm looking at Hush again.
Nice.
Batman Hush. Yes. It's been probably 10 years or better since I looked at that.
Have you ever read any of the other Hush books beyond Hush Beyond? And then, I've actually got them right here.
I've got them right here, yeah. Heart of Hush, House of Hush, Hush Beyond.
I actually have not, but just for fun, I went down to my collection, was looking around, was like, I had not read this in a while, let me revisit it. And that is just a fun, aside from the artwork, artwork, the story is very intriguing. I like where they go with all that.
Oh, and Hush Money, that was another one.
Hush
was one that I really wanted them. I wanted Hush to be the main character of Batman Arkham Knight. I wanted him to be the main villain.
Yeah.
And I want him to be in a movie.
Yeah, I think he'd make a good cinematic
guy.
Yes.
Remains to be seen. We can't even get.
but it falls in that trap that, and this is a Marvel thing. Falls in that trap that Marvel does, where almost every villain is just a dark reflection of the hero.
Yeah.
Like not even a differing power set.
Right.
Like. House, what are you reading lately?
I recently went back and reread Warren Ellis's Thunderbolts. I love that one. And when it comes to reading Marvel stuff, I'll get interested in one particular character or one particular team, and with one particular character I find very fascinating and I want to read more of, and Dave has it all sitting here, I can read as much as I want, but is the villain Bullseye. I think that should character. I mean, he's Marvel's equivalent to the Joker. He's a psychopath and everything. He's handing me Bullseye Greatest Hits.
Yes, that is the Bullseye book I keep telling you about that explores some of his backstory as far as he feels like telling it.
Oh, okay.
Where you see him as a minor league baseball pitcher who's cannot be hit against, and eventually his coach won't pull him out of the game, so he murders a batter with a fastball to the head.
So yeah, I reread that because Bullseye has a really neat story arc throughout that Warren Ellis Thunderbolts. I started rereading, but I haven't finished it yet. I started reading Marvel's War of Kings from 2008,
something like that.
really cool. It deals with more of their their cosmic stuff with the Inhumans and characters we haven't really gotten to see much because that TV show sucked. I saw the three episodes and I saw the writing on the wall where that was going.
It's been canceled already.
It got like 12, maybe 12-ish episodes. And then I picked up some Green Lantern stuff the other day. It was a Blackest Night tie-in. It was Rise of the Black Lantern. It was one of the very few Blackest Night tie-ins I don't have. So I started reading that again today.
Well, I think that wraps it up for us. I want to say thanks to Jay for joining us today. And
thanks for having me.
Giving us a three-man team to work with. Because otherwise, House and I just ramble on all the time.
We get really insufferable. Especially since we're the only two humans either one of us actually speak to on a daily basis.
Right.
It's...
And if there's anything that you guys heard about or if any questions that you have about anything you heard on the episode, by all means, drop us a comment on Facebook, drop us a comment on, I think we have Instagram, Twitter, basically any of the socials, the website, or hit up the NerdSplendid hotline, 805-669-7230. Leave us a voicemail. Other than that, I think we're out of here.
We're out. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.